campus in Old Westbury, New York. Westbury, New York.
Global Media News Time, live from Studio A. This is Global Media News on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Kristen Schmaling.
And I'm Elijah Petway. We're listening to Global Media News from the New Media Newsroom on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio.
Why are WWE stars using Twitter to tell stories and pick fights?
Why are you out of here with Snapchat?
Facebook is being sued again. What is it this time?
How many Facebook users have their data compromised by Cambridge Analytica?
Have you heard of Vero? It's a new social media platform.
Why is a college in China sending photos of drunk students to their parents?
Let's get ready to rumble!
All this and more coming up on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York.
Let's talk about Twitter and wrestling. Lauren Renda is here today to tell us about how the stars of the WWE are using social media to tell their stories and engage their fans. Bill, are you following any big name wrestlers on social media?
Plenty. Yes, there's two wrestlers I'm going to talk to you about in particular today. But there's been a lot of new controversial signings in WWE. For two examples, there's been a guy named EC3. He's very popular. He made his career in a promotion called TNA, and WWE kind of snatched him back up again because like, they saw the potential in him, and now they're letting him go for the last of the microphone. And King Ricochet, who is very well known for the indie scene, particularly New Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Art, he is very flippy, so he's very exciting to watch. So if you're a new wrestling fan, I recommend picking up the network right now. It's completely free. It's free for the team. Very, very good coincidence, it's TakeOver at WrestleMania weekend. So TakeOver New Orleans is Saturday, WrestleMania is Sunday. So it's a good time to jump right in. But enough of that. Before I get distracted, the two wrestlers I'm going to talk about today. First is Kevin Owens. He's been signed with the WWE for a while now. He started out in the NXT developmental brand, like I mentioned, but he's always been, like, he's an experienced wrestler. This guy is a new, he might only be 31, 32 years old, but he's already been wrestling for nearly 15 years. Like, this is his thing. He can get on the mic and he can kind of put incredible promo, skating to the fans, and it gets the crowd reacting, which is exactly what WWE wants. In particular, his feud with Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan has been picking up a lot of steam. There's a lot of excitement around it, mainly because of Daniel Bryan. He's actually been retired for three years, and he's coming back into the ring. A lot of fans are excited, and I think Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are two of the best heels on the show right now. So pairing them up together would make for something extremely exciting. And Kevin uses a lot of Twitter to kind of connect with the fans as well. He uses it to fire back at fans that at him, who call him out. In particular, recently, a fan caught his shirt in the audience after a wrestling match, and he tweeted at him and called him a loser, and Kevin fired back with an extremely, extremely mean message.
What was the feud about that you were just talking about with McMahon?
Shane McMahon, that's Vince McMahon's son, and Daniel Bryan, who's currently the general manager of SmackDown Live. They got in a brief feud because they felt Shane McMahon cost them their championship at Fastlane after he interfered in the match while the referee was unconscious or not looking. And he caused Kevin and Sami to turn on each other for a brief moment, like back in 2016 when they were feuding themselves. And this pissed them off to no end, of course. And now they've taken shots at Daniel Bryan and fired them because they attacked Shane after they got, you know, they lost the championship match. So now Shane and Bryan have become a tag team, and Sami and Kevin are going up against them for their careers at WrestleMania, which should be exciting because they're all very capable of the ring. Here's one, for example. A person named Josh added, Kevin, does this mean you're embarrassed to tell us what your life is? Not a very good sentence. And he fired back with, no, but you should be embarrassed by the semblance of the sentence, which is good. This stuff happens pretty much every day. It boosts fan interaction, it gets his following on Twitter higher, and that means his standing in the company's improved. You can tell this by just his matches at Mania itself. He's only been on the roster for 4 or 3 years, but the company's placed an incredible amount of faith in him by putting him in a U.S. title match last year. They're putting him in a tag team match with the returning Daniel Bryan, who's pretty much a legend at this point. And in 2015, he was the champion going into the Intercontinental Ladder opening match. The company sees a lot of potential in him, and I can't help but think that's part of his work on Twitter. There's another wrestler I wanted to talk about who's also heading into a very high-profile feud, but this is for the NXT developmental brand. His name is Tommaso Ciampa. He's very important to NXT right now, mainly because he's been cutting a lot of heel work on their top babyface in Johnny Gargano. And their match is going to be incredible. All of the tag team matches they took part in as Team DIY, Do It Yourself, were extremely fun and incredibly entertaining to watch. And Tommaso Ciampa himself has definitely been the highlight of this. And if you've seen any of his Twitter posts, he's incredibly bitter and jaded. He's very mean to fans. He acts like he doesn't care at all. Even some heels, to an extent, show some humility towards the fans. But Ciampa himself has been hard-hitting and controversial in the recent months. He even got attacked in his own apartment as part of a sketch by Johnny Gargano. And they're going to be in a no-holds-barred match at NXT TakeOver New Orleans. So it's sure to be hard-hitting, and it's sure to be something to watch. But in particular, I wanted to call his Twitter posts into attention, mainly because, like I said, they're hard-hitting, and they're very, very mean, which is kind of unseen a lot of it, because WWE changed to PG, and there's not as much, I don't know, violence, there's not as much cursing or anything like that, and there's not a lot of, colorful characters, I think. But here, just for example, his name on Twitter is currently Blackheart. It's got a verified checkmark. It's a skull of a beard if you were looking out for that. He tweeted out a day before the pay-per-view, "There is not a man on this planet that can do what I do the way I do. I am not a Paul Heyman guy." It's kind of a bit of an insider term. Whenever Paul Heyman manages his guy, they usually get over very big. So they call themselves Paul Heyman guys. He said he's not the chosen one. He's not the next Daniel Bryan. And Daniel Bryan is known for being a short-bearded wrestler. And he is Tommaso Ciampa. And this Saturday, the world's going to flip it. This is his first big singles match since Friday from the Boston. And it's something that we
What do you think makes the wrestlers post this kind of content?
I feel like a lot of underutilized wrestlers and underutilized talent don't really get a lot of television time. There's only so many people you can fit with 3 hours of television. And there's only so many guys you can write for. So social media kind of provides this outlet for the wrestlers to kind of show their true colors and character. And it gives them an opportunity to develop and earn favor with producers and road agents so they can book those more matches. And that way they make more money, they make more merch sales by pushing their own merchandise through either social media or the television time that they earn through making those Twitter posts. Like, just for an example, there's a guy named Kurt Hawkins. He does not get a lot of TV time. He always loses, but on social media, he's been very popular because of it. He always draws reference to it. He used it to push his shirt sales, and he used it recently because there's another wrestler on the roster named Braun Strowman is looking for a tag partner. And Kurt Hawkins used social media and Twitter to make videos about wanting to be his tag partner so he has an opportunity on the tag team belts.
So wrestling, still has a very big following today. Because I know I'm probably dating myself, but I remember, when I did used to watch with, my dad and, my brother, The Rock was still around, and, Stone Cold Steve Austin and, The Undertaker. I feel like I don't really hear that much about wrestling, so it's kind of interesting to hear you talk about it.
Oh, yeah, wrestling is kind of, I don't like to say this because I'm a big fan, but it's kind of fall and dipped a little bit. It has a consistent around the 2 million, 3 million audience for every show. So it's got a consistent and big following. But since the Attitude Era, ratings have definitely dipped, and there hasn't been a lot of, stars to make up for that on television. Stone Cold and The Rock got over in a big way by using their mic skills, and now I feel like Twitter has become kind of that new outlet for superstars to cut promos where they don't have to be regulated by WWE's writers, and lets them show a bit of their own personality and their own creative muscles, which I like a lot, because it's not often you get to see that. They know their worth, and they know how to present themselves, so they use Twitter to do that instead of always just using television.
And, can you explain some of the terms like babyface and heel for people who aren't really WWE buff?
Oh, of course. Babyface is the good guy, pretty much. Like, they're soft, they're white meat, they're easy to get knuckle. And the heel is someone who's obviously the villain. He's a lot meaner. He's, like, if you notice their strikes in the ring, they're more brutal, they're more fast and powerful. Kind of weird looking. They often attack baby faces, even if they're not feuding.
Thanks, Noah. Rihanna has sent the Snapchat. My co-host, Crystal Smelling, has been following the controversy that began with an ad set on Snapchat. Crystal, tell us about the advertising on Snapchat and why it made Rihanna so angry.
So, just as I reported to you guys last, there's just been so many issues with Snapchat, and everyone hates it. Snapchat is already, like, on the hot seat with popular users like Kylie Jenner not opening the app. Snapchat has come into the limelight once again, and it's not because users are starting to like it again. Global superstar Rihanna was extremely disappointed with one of the ads. The ad is for a game called Would You Rather in the App Store, which displayed her and ex-boyfriend Chris Brown and how users would react to the scenario. The ad asked users, would you rather slap Rihanna or punch Chris Brown? According to US Today, Snapchat lost $800 million because of the stunt, dropping the Snap stock nearly 4%. The stock closed at $17.20 on Thursday, down 65 cents a share, when most of Snapchat's revenue comes straight from advertisers. The ad was later removed by Snapchat, and they issued an apology claiming the ad was reviewed and approved in error since it violates advertising policy guidelines. Chrissy Teigen also commented on the issue, stating, I stopped using Snap. The content complaints of people not being able to find me, plus the Rihanna poll, no bueno. The verdict of Rihanna's fan base, Free Navy, is that Snapchat is canceled and to delete the whole app because Riri told me to. Rihanna commented on the issue in an Instagram story stating, now Snapchat, I know you already know you ate my favorite app out there, but I'm just trying to figure out what the point was with this mess, the singer wrote. I'd love to call it ignorance, but I know you ain't that dumb. You spent money to animate something that would intentionally bring shame to domestic violence victims and make a joke out of it. The ad is extremely controversial, and it can be hurtful as well to those who are victims of domestic violence, because it is simply making fun of it. How can Snapchat be so careless as to what they publish, as well as, did they do this on purpose to get publicity for their application from the backlash with the update? Or is the stunt with Rihanna going to cost them? We don't really know exactly, but if they don't change their image, it could be the end, if Rihanna didn't already end it.
What do you think about this Rihanna situation with Snapchat personally?
Personally, I think the situation is very distasteful. It's looking back at a bad time with her relationship in her past with Chris Brown. It was something she was highly criticized about and something that was constantly in the news and the public eye. I do feel bad, I guess, a little bit for Snapchat because simply they just can't get it right lately. A lot of celebrities are seeing that they're getting rid of the app, and I think the situation just made it a lot worse for them.
What do you think could be done to fix the situation? Because I've heard that they lost a lot of revenue over the past couple of weeks because of what she said about Snapchat. So how do you feel about that? And what do you think can be some solutions for?
I think Snapchat just needs to make a bigger effort and try to listen to what their users want and need. Like, if so many people took their time and made a whole petition, like, stating that they want Snapchat to go back to, like, the old update, it should say something. So.
Do you still use Snapchat?
I'm, like, not really on Snapchat as much as I used to be. Like, I'll go on when my friends send snaps and to keep up, like, my little streaks or whatever, but that's really it. Like, I'm not really on Snapchat a lot. The update is kind of really annoying.
You don't mind if I ask you, what's so bad about the update?
So basically, users, like, were able to, it kind of seems like you were friends with your celebrities that you follow, but now, like, you're basically just seeing, like, random stories, like, on your timeline or whatever, and it's just annoying for a lot of people because you obviously didn't want to follow those people, but you're now forced into following people, and you, like, you could hit the little X and it says, like, see less like this, but it's still going to be something like that.
What do you think, you're going to fix it for more users? Over the time, or have they responded? Has Snapchat responded in any way about if they're going to change back to it? Or
they haven't really said anything about, like, them changing back to it. They just said that, like, they're sorry for the way that users feel, but I feel like they don't really care. Like, if everyone made such a big deal about this, I feel like you should try as a company to fix it, because you are losing money and you are losing users. Like, people are actually deleting the app. So it's like, get it together. For Global Media News, I'm Kristen Schmaling. Back to you, Eli.
Thanks, Kristen. Up next, Facebook. There's a lot of Facebook news to cover, and we have two stories about the trials and tribulations confronting the most popular social media platform in the world.
Welcome back to Global Media News. I'm Kristen Schmaling. My co-host Eli Pedway is on the Facebook beat this week. Facebook has been facing a lot of criticism recently, and even several lawsuits. Eli, you noticed one lawsuit against Facebook that you think is significant. It concerns housing discrimination. What does Facebook have to do with housing?
Well, to explain the situation, housing advocates have filed a lawsuit against Facebook that stated that Facebook gives housing advertisers the option to exclude families with children and women from receiving advertisements, as well as users with interests based on disability and national origin. The lawsuit claims that fair housing supporters in New York, Washington, D.C., Miami, and San Antonio, Texas led the investigation.
Can you explain what's going on with the lawsuit?
So what happens is that Facebook actually approves and permits these advertisers to publish these ads in a discriminatory manner without consumers ever knowing they have been excluded from this. Just to get a better understanding, it's basically being considered the virtual equivalent of posting a for rent sign that says no families with young kids or no women.
How does this make Facebook look?
It looks really bad, and the reason why it looks so bad is because this comes after more than a year later, after ProPublica, which is a nonprofit investigative news organization, they revealed to the public in 2016 that Facebook's housing ads were seen by only white people, which is a violation of the federal fair housing rules. So when things like this happen, Facebook or any other social media site usually come out with a response.
So what are people's opinion on this matter?
The people are very upset about this, as expected. Lisa Rice, who is president and CEO of the National Fair Housing Alliance, said that the discriminatory purposes needs to stop. It's already a challenge for women, families, and children, people with disabilities and other underserved groups to find housing, which is true, because instead of opening doors for housing opportunities, it seems like Facebook is closing them, which isn't good at all. And to give another example of people being truly done with Facebook, one of the plaintiff lawyers, her name is Diana Book, told the New York Times that they want the court to order Facebook to develop a plan to remove any ability for advertisers to access Facebook's checklist for excluding groups of people and posting of housing-related ads. Another example would be Catherine Rosenfeld, who is another attorney for the plaintiffs. She said that if Facebook truly wants to bring the world closer together, it will start by giving female-headed families with children equal access to Facebook advertisements for apartment renters.
Has Facebook responded yet to this lawsuit?
They haven't really responded yet, but a Facebook spokesperson has said that there's absolutely no place for discrimination on Facebook, and basically that they believe the lawsuit doesn't have any worth, and they will defend themselves to the very end. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, since it's against the law, and they have promised to make changes before, but nothing has been done yet, and the same problems are occurring. Reporting for Global Media News, I'm Elijah Pedway. Back to you, Kristen.
Thanks, Eli. Let's stick with Facebook. The really big story recently has been the revelation that millions of Facebook users have had their data compromised by a political consulting firm called Cambridge Analytica. Jay Shah is here to tell us about this developing scandal. Jay, what is Cambridge Analytica, and why did they have all this Facebook user data?
So, this isn't very new right now, obviously, considering Cambridge Analytica was recently found out to have been harvesting private data of millions of users, and they used it to help, supposedly, it's not confirmed, but supposedly they used it to help Donald Trump with his political campaign during the elections. Now, obviously, there's the whole, you know, Russia meddling, whatever, all that BS going on. but this is a little more scandalous right now, especially considering they harvested that data using Facebook. So what they did was they utilized, you know, the surveys that you take and those questionnaires that you take, what character are you or what personality are you or stuff like that on Facebook. They used platforms such as those to collect private data about users and then use it against them. Now, that is kind of sort of scary, especially considering propaganda is a rampant thing, and we obviously don't want to be influenced by something like this, and especially considering this is also a violation of our privacy. And the worst part is that Facebook did not do anything to protect its users, regardless of all of their security settings, their privacy measures, them boasting, you know, their valued security and measures and whatever else. So let's talk about political campaigning and the role that new media has started playing today. Now, obviously, political campaigns have been, you know, popular, especially presidential campaigns, electoral campaigns, as I recently found out is a thing, it's a term. So there's America First for Wilson, Romney, Great for 68. These are very popular, including, you know, Yes We Can by Obama. And then I think the most popular one was FDR's I Want You, the Uncle Sam campaign. And then now we have Trump, like, Make America Great Again. So before the internet was founded, these presidents, they had physical platforms. They had physical campaigns. They went to all of these places. They had floats. They had, you know, rallies. They had posters. And they had residents that would volunteer to put up posters and stuff on their houses and cars and whatever. And then once the internet started, we had ad campaigns. There were websites built specifically for these campaigns. And then Obama, he revolutionized the whole social media for politics. So ever since then, obviously, Trump has been misusing it. And this scandal that has come out, it kind of sort of adds as a catalyst to this whole misuse of new media. So, in your opinion, what do you guys think about social media being misused in such a way and your privacy being violated? Don't you think it's scary?
I think it's very scary, actually. I think the misuse of social media with political leaders like Trump and people who have a lot of influence on today's society, it's just a scary thing that what is going on right now.
I personally think that, like, our president shouldn't have all this time to be sitting there tweeting. At least with Obama, like, he would tweet, like, you know, once in a while, or, like, when it's a holiday to tweet something, you know, about the nation, or he would have his advisors do it. Like, it's just this total mess that every single day you watch the news, it's, like, a new tweet that everyone's, like, talking about.
Yeah, he's taken the whole stream of consciousness thing to a whole different level. And what advisors does Trump even have in?
I doubt it.
Who's left in the White House? Nobody. Everybody's being fired left and right by a madman, a maniac. But either way, would you guys still use Facebook or Twitter, even anything, any form of social media after finding out something of this level?
I mean, yeah, because social media is really like a... It's daily. It's something you use every day. I don't really use Facebook that much. I only use the messenger. But I do have a Twitter still. Things like this, for some reason, we kind of expect it today because Facebook has been going through a lot, especially the past couple of years now. Mm-hmm. And it's just things like this you always expect to happen with privacy being breached and people's information being taken down. And things like this, it seems like it's always happening. It's always happening. I don't know if they really have an answer or if they did answer to it yet. Because I saw in the news that they did want Mark Zuckerberg to testify in front of them, but I think he declined to. So, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Facebook with this Cambridge Analytica fiasco.
So, are you familiar with Facebook Connect?
Not really.
They announced it in 2008, but they started working on it in 2007, and it was this platform that they made, and it grew, and it went big, and it brought in all of these different developers and whatever, and it was a platform, it was like a multi-purpose platform. So, there was one such thing, part of Facebook Connect, called Super Wall from Rock You, where you could put up pictures. And this was generating a lot of traffic. It was very popular. I believe it was similar to Snapchat, but, for Facebook, I guess. And now that you think about it, there's evidence that Facebook tapped into the user, Cambridge Analytica tapped into the Facebook user API, and Facebook didn't monitor it. And imagine you've been putting up pictures such as this that they have been harvesting, and instead of deleting all of this information like they were supposed to, they kept it and they used it against us. So, what do you guys think about that?
How long ago did Facebook Connect come out? Like, I feel like I've never even heard of it.
2007, apparently. I know. So I hadn't heard of it till this whole thing happened either. I'm not very active on social media in general, let alone Facebook. I absolutely despise Facebook. I hate it. It should combust. But you know what? Can't help it. It's still helpful with like keeping in touch with people, and that's the only reason I've kept it. But I've always been wary of my information. Like recently, Facebook started having users post, their legal, identification. So now you're not allowed to have any other alternative names. You have to have your legal name as it appears on your passport or driver's license. And if you can't confirm it with valid identification, then you get locked out of your account. All of your stuff gets deactivated, and they delete all your pages, all your pictures, everything. Supposedly delete. So I've had 3 or 4 accounts so far, and that's what has happened to all of those. But I would never do that. I would never. They claim that they're going to use it just for the purpose of checking or verifying your identification, and then it's not going to get saved or whatever. But I don't believe it.
Do you think they have a solution at all to fix this or to appease people's worries?
I will counter you with another question. Do you honestly think that Facebook cared about a solution, considering they probably conspired with Cambridge Analytica and with Palantir Technologies and with Donald Trump?
True.
What do you think users can do to protect themselves from all these privacy breaches on Facebook?
Well, don't use Facebook. I can't think of anything else. I've been thinking about this. I've been mulling this over, and I really don't know. There are ways around it. So if you have a Facebook for a business organization, or like our radio station has a Facebook that has the radio station's name on it. So for that, sometimes Facebook is. I hope they're not listening, by the way, because I don't want them to find out this loophole. But for organizations, you can have the organization's name. So for Old Westbury Web Radio, the first name is Old Westbury and the last name is Web Radio with no spaces. So that is a loophole. That is possible. And that does kind of sort of help keep the data private. Like, you're not asked to submit it anywhere. But I don't know. I mean, for all you know, the minute someone's account is created, all of their information is saved, goes to Facebook servers, and they're probably cloning all of us. I'm kidding. I hope they're not.
So Facebook owns Instagram. Do you think the same thing is happening on Instagram?
Let's not talk about that. Because I really like Instagram. I prefer it. It's less stupid compared to what people post on Facebook now, or what they use it for. So, what's up?
Well, thanks, Jay. Let's step away from Facebook and talk about a new social media platform, Vero. Is it any competition for Facebook, and why are some college students in China worried about photos they have posted on social media?
WWE news reporter Scarlett Perez is on the social media beat this week, and she has discovered a new social media startup called Vero. Scarlett, tell us about this new social media option. What makes it different from giants like Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram?
Vero is one of the newest social media platforms that has caught everyone's attention. It is a subscription-based social network, and the first 1 million people who sign up get free Vero for life. The others, after 5 million subscribers, they have to pay an annual fee. This new app is also an image and video-focused platform that draws the attention of photographers, videographers, and social media influencers to post and show off their work to the Vero community.
Where does the term Vero come from?
It comes from the Italian word truth. So it is known as the Authentic app. It was first launched in 2015 by Eamon Harry and movie financier Modest Mabuse and venture capitalist Scott Birnbaum.
How popular is Vero?
This new app is the second most popular app in the Apple Store, and it sits at the top of Google Play's free apps chart. Vero users are able to post books, movies, and TV shows. Since Snapchat's new format, Twitter trolls, and Facebook face news troubles drives users away, Vero has procured intense popularity. Unlike other social media, the things people post on Vero show in chronological order, so that's the difference between Vero and other social media. And then another thing that people love about Vero is that it does not have like those ads that Facebook has and like Snapchat.
Why is it known as authentic?
Why is it known as authentic? Because it's supposed to be true. Like all the ads are not fake. Like the fake news on Facebook. So that, yeah, that's one of the things about it.
Are you yourself a Vero user?
I'm not, just because of the fact that you have to pay for it after the first 1 million users. So, I'd rather not. I'd rather not pay for social media, you know. But how much is it? I don't really care how much it is, but the fact that you have to pay, like, that's the drag.
Do you think this will have people steer more towards Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook just because of the fact that you have to pay? You have to pay for the app itself.
Well, honestly, I saw my friend. She has this app. And it's honestly based, like, on the person. Like, if you like it, you're going to go on it. But if you don't like the app, if you don't want to pay for it, then you're not going to go on it.
Do you think the hype will die down soon, like, with these apps that go up top, and then, next thing you know, like, 3 weeks, 4 weeks later, it disintegrates, basically?
Honestly, it might die out. Just because of the fact you have to pay for this.
Thanks, Scarlett. Let's talk about China. Juan Salazar has found a story about college students in China. Juan, tell us about this new college policy from Yulin Arts University. What is this college doing about students drinking that's making news?
Good morning, how you doing? Well, to start off, we'll talk about the story. So, in China, there's a university known as Yulin Arts University. It's like a music school, maybe more of arts and stuff. School decided to have a policy where if students get caught doing intoxicated activities, they are captured on camera and sent the pictures sent directly to their doorsteps. So what school is trying to do is that they're trying to spread a positive way to put an end to alcohol ban in school. But the students at the school feel like the institution is infiltrating too much in student lives. They're trying to control student lives and not trying to have students express themselves. they're trying to have students get feared by the parents, being humiliated in front of the parents, and maybe being in front of the parents. The school even stated that the parents can't even come in and do what they want with their kids, how they think fit to handle what's going on.
Like not being in a great state of mind, such a.
How do students at the university feel about this type of policy?
Students at the university are really outrageous because, to add to the story, there was a video released about what was going on in school, and the school released a video in which they were showing students drinking, doing illegal activities like drinking games, and while facts were being played throughout the video. This video caused a lot of heat within the student body because they felt like it was an invasion of privacy, and they felt like it was an invasion of, it was a humiliation to them that the federal creators would see them make this.
Do you think this could happen in the United States?
It's very possible. Institutions, our universities especially, have a lot of control on what they want from their students. They put a lot of demand for instance, party rules and their body of policies, and they exclude certain students from doing certain things. So it is very possible to happen in the state, but on a larger scale. We have to remember that China is a third-world country, and the government really runs them to a T. They don't have as much freedom of speech as we do, so we have to put that into effect.
Is this viewed as positive or negative?
I would say this is viewed as negative because any time that a student is being recorded in a negative way and being excluded for that, it's never a good thing, especially if their parents are finding out about it and they have no say in what to do about it.
What do you think would happen if it came to our campus? I mean, I don't know how the campus life is here, but is it crazy enough that some people would be in jeopardy?
Definitely people, especially here, it would be very jeopardy because it's something you don't see every day. So it's a new way, it's a new form of basically trying to put an end to drinking, which it's a college atmosphere. Kids like want to drink and do what they want. It's like any outlet to find a way out of
it. And do you have any personal thoughts about the invasion of privacy over there?
I feel like there is no privacy. It just is one of the best people to take it. I feel like this is definitely not a way to cut a stop on what we need. I feel like this is only going to entice students to fight a power, fight the higher power. So the message that they're more than just. They're
answers. Thanks, Juan. And thanks to Christian Spelling for hosting with me this week. Many thanks to Nikita Hines-Lundy and Ricardo Morales for producing our show. And thank you to our engineer, Joe Fryman. Today we have reports from Lola Miranda, Juan Salazar, Christian Spelling, myself, Jay Shaw, and Scarlett Perez.
Lola Media News is brought to you by OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest post on the Catalyst at oldwestburycatalyst.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's OWWRGMN.